It's the Mike Tech Show, show number 520. This show is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. Please visit techpodcast.com. Hello, everybody. Welcome to the podcast. I'm your host, Mike Smith. Thank you very much for downloading and subscribing to the show. Please visit the main website at miketechshow.com. You can email me questions and suggestions for show topics at miketechshow@gmail.com. You can leave me a voicemail message. The phone number is 240-949-2450. And that's Mike Tech Show, all one word, on Skype. And in a little bit, I have three really good voicemails. So stay tuned for that. You can follow me on Twitter, twitter.com/Mike Tech Show, Facebook, facebook.com/Mike Tech Show, and also facebook.com/Mike Nation Net. Also, we have the wiki at mtswiki.com. There you'll find links to all the past shows, links to the show notes, the audio. It's a great resource. And that, again, is mtswiki.com. Have a jam-packed show. I have a couple product reviews. I have some in-the-trenches stories involving Verizon. I have the three voicemails I mentioned and a stack of emails. So I want to get started. And this show is brought to you by Instant House Call. On-demand remote support and unattended remote access, all in a single tool. Remotely access your customer's PC or Mac instantly with no pre-installed software. Install unattended remote access to perform maintenance on your schedule. Start providing remote support for all your customers today with Instant House Call. Click on the link at my website at miketechshow.com. On the left-hand side, it's going to take you to instanthousecall.com. Enter the promo code MikeTechShow and you get 15 days free. So instanthousecall.com, enter the promo code MikeTechShow and take advantage of the free 15-day trial. Want to start with my two Verizon stories. The first one occurred a couple weeks ago, and I was going to talk about this last Thursday, and I actually got tied up with lots of client work, and I had no chance to do the show. Then I wanted to do the show Saturday night. I really had every intention of doing it about 10 o'clock Eastern time on Saturday night, and then had four clients that I had to visit on Saturday, and I just got wiped out, and there was just no way to do the show. So here I am. It's going to be a long show, so sit back, relax. And the first Verizon story involves a retainer client of mine. He wants to change all of his billing for all of his vendors to his new LLC. So his company name's changed to add LLC. He incorporated. And he wants to make sure, you know, his phone, his business phone's in that name, the utilities, electric, and just anything that's business related. So he has the business Fios install for his phone and his internet. And he doesn't have any TVs or anything in the office. So they, and I can understand a little bit given the telecom industry and how they work. But to us mere mortals, we're not going to understand this. They need to recreate a whole new account for him because it's a name change. They just can't go into a field and change a name. They need to change everything, including a reprovisioning of his Fios. Now, they're not going to come out and reinstall it, but he has a static IP address for different remote accesses and things that we have set up. So now they have to change the static IP address, they tell him. And we're having conversations, and I tell my client, I have to be there when they do this, unless they are coming out on site and they're going to back up the configuration of the Verizon router, save it, then restore it, and then change the static IP address, I have to be there because you have custom port forwarding set up in there. It's too unique to your business. He calls me back and assures me, says, Mike, they can do this on Sunday. I said, John, the business office is not open on Sunday. If we have a problem, we're stuck. We are not going to get any support. Oh, no, no, no. They tell me they do this all the time on Sunday. Got no problem. They're going to make the change. I said, the IP address, make sure they send me all that info. I get an email where I'm copied on it from Verizon, giving me the block of the static IP addresses, the subnet mask, the default gateway, everything I need. And they said, all I have to do is go into the router, make those changes, and he'll be up and running. I said, okay, sounds pretty easy. When can I do this? And they said, well, anytime Sunday morning, after Sunday morning. So we agree at 11 o'clock, I'm going to meet him at the office. And we even get notified on Saturday night that the change and everything has happened. So I'm like pretty excited that this is going to work. I'm going to just go in and I'm going to be able to make the change. Well, I make the change. Guess what? We don't have internet access. I put everything in exactly the way they tell me. No internet access. I said, you know, John, maybe they have to do something and turn it on. So we call Verizon. We have our order number. And we keep getting forwarded to a voicemail that says, the business office is closed on Sunday. Please call us, you know, blah, 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 Monday morning. And I look at John and I said, John, I don't think we're going to get help. We wait for tech support. Tech support finally gets on. It's like an hour later. Tech support finally comes on and we get a human being. We describe our problem. And he says, well, the business office has to help you. And they forward us without even having a chance for me to respond. They just forward us right to the same voicemail that says they're closed. This is a complete waste of time. And I said, John, I really think that on Monday, all they got to do is throw a switch. They're going to turn this on. So you just got to give them a call Monday morning. You could imagine Monday morning at 9 a.m., I get a phone call from my client. He tells me, Mike, I have Verizon on the phone and it's not working. They said they've done everything. I said they couldn't have done everything. So now I go, they want me to activate his account. So they give me a website to go to. I go to that website. I answer all the questions for my client to activate the new service. I activate the new service. He still does not have internet access. They find that there is an issue on their end. They correct it. Okay. So now I go on my way and I'm helping my regular clients for the day. And this isn't this Monday. It's last Monday. And I get a panic phone call in the afternoon telling me, Mike, internet's been down for a couple hours. There's something wrong. I tell them I can't get there until about 5 o'clock. So they schedule a call that Verizon is going to call in at 5:30. Now I get there a few minutes before five. I wrap up with my other clients. I get there and I'm doing everything. I reboot the router. I said, there's something wrong again on their end. Wouldn't you know it, tech support, even though they waited all day for me to get on site because they swore something was wrong on site, I get a tech. I call tech support. I'm not waiting for the guy who's calling me. I call in the normal tech support with the business because it's right before 5 o'clock, and I get a tech that he finds that it's on their end. My client is going out of his mind. Why didn't they do this when he went down again at 11:30? He was down all day because of a Verizon issue, and it's something that they did on their end. I still don't know what they fixed. They said it was their end. They said they fixed it, and I just don't know. So he's up and running, and he's been up and running now for almost 2 weeks with no issue. The moral of the story, if you are sure that you've done everything right, that you've tested everything on your end, you got to be diligent with tech support. Firm, but you can't be insulting. And I've tried to do that because sometimes I lose my patience and I'll go off on them, but that doesn't help your case. So I was nice, but I was firm. And the tech I got understood. And he understood I knew what I was doing. And the minute I confirmed a couple things, I said, this has to be on your end. Because I took my laptop and I plugged it directly into the router and I couldn't get internet access. We even gave me a static IP address on my laptop where I was directly connected to the router. I should have been able to get out. And I was in the WAN port of the router with a static IP address that was given to us. And I still could not get out from my laptop. That's when he finally realized I got to escalate this to tier two. And yes, tier two had we were in some kind of a holding pattern that they had to take us out of and move it to another area to allow the internet access. And I said, well, if we did that this morning, how did that happen again? Nobody would come clean and tell me exactly what went wrong. So that was the only frustrating part out of it, which it was fixed, but I don't know what Verizon did to fix it. And that's a little frustrating. So let's move forward a week. And now it's this past Monday. And I have a client that has purchased a big house in the not far from me. And he wants the Fios Quantum with the 300 meg down, 300 meg up, and all of the Quantum TV. Now, I've never been part of one of those installs, but I mean, it's no different really than anything else. The network infrastructure that I'm laying out in the house, I have my electrician, who's a good friend who does tremendous work. He's the one who's done the wiring for my house, and he's put the generator in and anything that I need, and he's just incredible with his testing and the running of Cat 6 and all of the networking that I've ever needed. And he's just a master electrician, and he's running all of the wires. So we're running home run coaxes from an area in the basement, which we've deemed the server room of the house, and 24 Cat 6 connections. So I have a switch. I have the router that I talked about, the really nice ASUS. I have three of them set for seamless roaming throughout the house. Again, the 9 coax runs to 9 different areas. Quantum Verizon. Let's start. One of the things that he wanted was me to be there for the entire install. One, he's traveling. And two, he trusts me implicitly because I'm the IT support for his company. And I'm on site and I get there at 8 a.m. because they can be there anytime from 8 a.m. to noon. Well, we get a message, they're running late. Then we get a message, they're running late again. And then again. They're 6 hours late. It's now 2 o'clock in the afternoon. I've been there from 8 a.m. and Verizon shows up. They see the installation, they see what's in front of them. He has to get another guy because they got to run the fiber, which we've already had interduct run all the way up the driveway. And then we don't want them to put an install right in the garage. We want them to put the fiber in this like server room that we've created. So I had my electrician put interduct from where we know where they're coming at to the house to make it real easy for them with a string all the way to the area we want. The guy sees this and he is ecstatic. He says, this is going to make it significantly easier, but it's still a lot of work. And because it's such long length, they have to get a splicer out and you know, they have to, that's a different guy. Then they haven't moved yet. There's no TVs in the house, so he has to get like a little one of those little portable TVs for testing in all the rooms. It was a 7-hour installation, and nothing went wrong. Just from a time from setting up the boxes, from setting up everything. Everything went perfect, and it was still 7 hours. That's what I wanted to talk to you about. This was actually a very good story because Verizon sent an excellent tech. As a matter of fact, the tech and I bonded so well. I have his business card, and I am going to be changing the network in my house. Once I seen the 300 meg at the end of the night, 300 up, 300 down, I was so jealous. I said, I was thinking of upgrading my Fios, which is just 35-35. I was going to go to 150. No way. I'm going to 300. I want 300 up, 300 down. While I was spending 7 hours with this tech, we were picking each other's brains on different things because he wasn't the networking guy that I am, and I don't understand the quantum and some of the things for the TV. I learned a lot. And real quick, if you want to record 12 programs at the same time, when you get the quantum service, that means there's two boxes that you have to deploy that each one has six tuners in it, and they're called the servers. And you decide they can really go anywhere in the house. It doesn't matter because they will be looked at as one big repository for all your recordings. Then you get what they call clients. And these client boxes are significantly smaller. They have standard def and high def for the box. Great question from T-Winks, which is, does fiber go through coax? And the answer is no. Here's what they do. They bring the fiber as close as they can to your house. They bring it to the garage or they terminate in your house, somewheres in the house. And that's where so fiber to the house. And then from there, they break out two ways. One, coax to all of your boxes for television. Then there has to be one coax connection to the router. But that's not for the internet. You can only get, at least Fios will not do anything over 75 meg via coax because that's what it tops out at. You need Cat 6 to bring 300 meg from the fiber box to the router. So that's what I don't have right now. And I have to get a Cat 6 run from the garage all the way to my office, which is where I want the router to be and where it is now. I have to have a Cat 6 Ethernet connection for the internet. Then everything else is the same. But the fiber is a run, and it has to be a straight run all the way from the poles all the way to your house. That is a single fiber cable that is not cut. It has to be a one single solid connection with no breaks, no hubs, nothing. Once you get that clean connection, you now have the full fiber connection to your house. Now you break out to all the coax and the Ethernet, and you have a phone section that can then tie into the copper in your house for phone or into the internet for voice over IP if you do that. But if you're with Verizon, you want to tie into the copper in your house. This takes a lot of time for all of this to work, all the boxes, everything to be labeled, and we name all the rooms properly, and to just do all that massive testing. It was 7 hours and it went really well. So here's the deal. When I put my order in and I get an order for all of the changes that I'm going to be doing, he said, Mike, give me a call once you get the order, your order number, call me. And he'll pick up that order request for that day and he'll be the one doing my house. I am so looking forward to that. That means I know that when I'm going to be doing my upgrade for my Verizon, it's going to go well because I'm already met the tech that's going to be doing it. We've already bonded. So that is great. And it was nice to actually have someone that really knew what they were doing on their side. And it made the installation, although very long, I know it's perfect and it's working great for my client. I had the one bad Verizon story and then a very positive, good Verizon story. And the reason they were 6 hours late is because this guy ran into obstacles that nobody foreseen on the installation that he had prior to the one. It was supposed to be a real easy install. They ran into serious roadblocks that were not anticipated by anyone, and he will not leave the job until it is working perfectly. I understood at that point. You know, you can be 6 hours late and it be ugly because you don't give a reason. But he gave the reasons to me and he said, look, this is, I ran into this and I could not leave until this was right. And I completely understood that. I wasn't happy with losing my entire day like that. It wasn't my plans, but I understood and I appreciate that dedication of a tech who's going to make sure that everything is installed exactly the way it should be. All right, two product reviews. The first one is the Black Armor NAS 400. A big thank you to John, a listener who emailed me and actually emailed Carrie and I. He sent Carrie one last year and he sent me one this year. I wanted it because Carrie's always talked about the Black Armor and he loves it for deploying in businesses. But one of the things that I wanted to really have this NAS, because my only NAS experience, you hear me talk about Synology all the time. Now, I've had this NAS box for maybe a month now and have been running it, and it has been rock solid. I'm going to give you my one comparison, my one beef with it. It's not a real beef. It works great. There's four slots, and I put four 3 terabyte It's a Seagate Black Armor, but I put the Western Digital Red NAS drives. I got a very good deal on Amazon, 4 3-terabyte drives. So once the RAID's done, it really only comes up to be 8-point-something terabytes. And I love the fact that I have that much storage, but the interface, I was very disappointed. Two things I was disappointed with. The setup, once I turned it on, it was in setup mode for 26 hours. I'm not kidding. I actually thought something was wrong and I was going to stop it. There was a couple times I was tempted. There's got to be something wrong. I need to reset this and start over again. Can it really take this long? I let it go overnight. I was very patient. And if you have a Black Armor and you're putting that much storage and you put the four drives in all at once and you turn it on and it starts building the RAID set, I just didn't anticipate that long. But at the 26-hour mark, all of a sudden, I seen it change and said it was ready. And I was like, wow. And then I was able to get the IP address. Now, the software that it came with couldn't find it on my network. Now, I knew it got an IP address. I had to look at my network scan on my iPhone to see whether it... I have a utility called Snap that when you're on a Wi-Fi, it'll do a scan for all the IP addresses that's on the network and it'll list them out. Well, I seen the Black Armor was that IP address, and then I went right to it and logged right in from a browser. I was able to set up shares, set up some basic permissions, and it was fine. I have a lot of experience with the Synology devices, night and day. When I mean night and day, I mean couldn't believe how there's just no comparison. This is so basic. The black armor, very reliable, very nice. I've been banging away. I've been backing up. Matter of fact, Shadow Protect, my images are going to it. The kids are saving music back and forth. I'm saving all my music library there. I've been pounding away at it, and it's working great. But you can do so much more if you have a really good operating system. And that's what Synology brings. And that's the big difference in their NAS. They have apps that are built in that you can use it as a music server with and deliver it to your iPhone. You can, the backup is built in. They give you a client to be able to use that to back up your workstations, to share points, to share areas on the Synology server. The Black Armor, they make you buy the backup software. It doesn't come with it. So there's a lot of advantages, and it's not so much the box, the RAID, and the reliability and functionality of it. It's those little extras. It's the software. It's creating the groups, creating the accounts. It's the interface. And the interface on the Synology is light years ahead of the Black Armor. So I just wanted to point out that Black Armor, great box. And I love it, and I hope I have it here for years and years and years to come with my backup needs on my office network here. Given the choice, take a strong look at the Synology because of all the extra options. I even checked to see if there was an updated firmware, and I do have the latest firmware. Wanted to make sure everybody understood that and understood differences if you're looking at different NAS devices. Now, on to my second review. A few weeks ago, I had the pleasure of setting up a Surface Pro 3 for a client. Really, really liked working on it. It was fast. It was everything I would want out of a laptop and a tablet. I was so impressed with it that I pulled the trigger this week. And I now have my own, and I'm going to turn this into my own, my consulting laptop. Let me give you a couple things about the Surface Pro 3. It comes with a lot of different options where you can buy it. It has the Core 3, the Core i5, and the Core i7. And these are the different price points where you have as low as $799, and that is the 64 gig Core i3. They're all SSD drives. The highest end, which tops out at $2,000, is the Core i7 with 512 gig SSD. So I went to the middle, to the sweet spot in the middle, Core i5, 256, but 8 gigs of RAM. The low end has 4 gigs, and then as you go up, the upper models have 8 gigs of RAM. So I definitely wanted 8 gigs of RAM. I had to have a minimum of 256 gig of storage. And then I figured a Core i5 is just right there for me. I have never been someone who has liked or have been, or I've never been in the Microsoft hardware camp. I thought Microsoft should never get into hardware because they never did it well. And I was never happy with any of the hardware, maybe an occasional keyboard or mouse, but that was about it. I'm not a gamer, so I'm not into the Xbox world, which really is a different company within Microsoft, and that's a separate world, the gaming world. They got it right here, folks. This Surface, they've had a couple chances now at the Surface, and they had the Surface 2. This is now the 3. This is great. It's a 12-inch gorgeous display. It's 2160 by 1440. Now, that's not the highest res. You can get a tablet with higher, but this is great high-def resolution. That it's a different aspect ratio. It's not that 16:9. It's a 3:2 aspect ratio. The tablet is heavier than your typical like iPad Air. But it's a full laptop, and that's the trade-off. Their keyboard, and this is actually a negative. The keyboard is something that it's nicer than their previous keyboards, but you got to pay extra. that's one of the negatives that I'm going to go into, which is the extras that you have to buy. But it's not negative enough for me to give it a thumbs down. This is a complete double thumbs up purchase, because if you are in the market where you want a tablet, yet you need the full functionality of a laptop, this is the perfect hybrid. It's light. The drawing area is beautiful. This 12-inch glass display, I write on it with the pen. There's a much smarter pen now with the Surface Pro 3 than the previous versions. The Bluetooth 4.0 is excellent. They have a great kickstand on the back of it, where it now is more flexible than the previous model, so you got more points where you can adjust it. It's everything that I would want out of a hybrid when I would discuss options with a client with the perfect laptop that can turn into a tablet. This is it. There's no Ethernet connection. Now, I understand that because it's too small and you certainly don't have an optical drive. You have one USB 3.0 port. I wish it had more. But because you only have one, and if I have to have Ethernet because maybe I'm configuring a router or a switch where I have to have an Ethernet cable to plug into it, and if I am truly going to use this as a laptop for consulting, I purchased a USB 3.0 hub LAN adapter, and it was like under $25. It gives you three flat USB ports, and at the end, you plug gigabit Ethernet. I tested that last night, and it worked perfectly. So now I have a little adapter. If I'm in an office and I have to connect Ethernet, I can do it, and I still get my ports. I love it. Let me get into some of the pros and cons. Let me tell you the pros. High-quality 12-inch screen. It's slimmer and lighter than the 10.6-inch Surface Pro 2. You have the multi-angle kickstand, improved type cover keyboard and touchpad, good performance and battery life, and very nice, the pen integration with OneNote. They finally are going to make a believer out of me of Microsoft OneNote. I didn't get OneNote. OneNote's been out for a long time. I mean, a really long time. And I've never warmed up to OneNote because you really have to have a pen. And I've never embraced Windows 8 because you really have to have a touchscreen. This is where you really can take advantage of Windows 8. This is where it makes sense. I have no problem with the tablet and the touchscreen, and it's great. But do you want to know, I still put classic shell. Even though this is a tablet, when I am in desktop mode, I need that full start menu because I want access to the programs. And that's one of the most difficult things to get to when they put that kind of half start menu in Windows 8.1. You can get to your apps, but you can't get to the programs. And I need to be able to get to both. And Classic Shell allows me to get to both. It actually works really well. I have a button that I've programmed on the system that it's like a main button and it's a little Windows logo. When I touch that, I go to the opposite of where I'm at. If I'm in the desktop, I get the Metro interface. If I'm in that Metro interface and I click the start button, I get the desktop. I love that, and that's a great use of that that I've set up last night, where I can flip between them seamlessly. Let me give you some of the cons. And someone in the chat mentioned there is an SD card slot. It is a micro SD card slot, and it's under the kickstand. So you don't see it unless you open up the bottom part of the kickstand and then you can see the card. But you do have a card and you can put a 64 gig micro SD in that. The cons are The type cover is an extra cost. It's an extra $130 just to be able to get this keyboard. Now, the keyboard's nice, but they should have included it. I mean, you really have to buy it. The Surface Pen has no proper home on the tablet. How can you make a pen that doesn't attach or have some kind of a clip or something on the tablet? It's so easy to lose the pen. Now, they provide a little loop when you buy the keyboard that you can stick and attach to the side of the keyboard and you can put the pen in there. There's only one USB 3.0 port. It lacks a full-size SD, even though it's a micro. I wish it was full. And this is something I read, and it runs warm and activates fans more than the previous models. Now, I have not abused that to the point where the fans have kicked on, so I will report back on that. Great question by Tim in the chat. Docking station. The docking station for the Surface Pro 3 is great. My client has it. Now, I don't need the docking station, but he needs it at work. It provides like 4 or 5 USB 3.0 ports. It provides an Ethernet port, and it also provides the mini display port so you can have an external monitor. Another option, an accessory that I purchased because I'm going to use this for presenting. As a matter of fact, if you are in the Philadelphia area, in Willow Grove, the PAX, the Philadelphia Area Computer Society, on October 18th, I will be hosting the Windows SIG. I'm subbing for the current person who couldn't make it in October, and they asked me to sub. Hour one, I'm going to be doing a live demonstration and presentation on this, on the Surface Pro 3. And then the second hour is going to be just Q&A for just questions and general issues, and you know, we'll have a lot of fun. I bought a 3-way mini DisplayPort adapter. It's an adapter that has 3 sides on it: HDMI, DVI, and DisplayPort. I wish it had VGA. As a matter of fact, when I purchased it, it didn't have VGA. But then I found I have a mini DisplayPort adapter with VGA. So I'll carry those two. And now I can connect to any monitor out there I can connect to having those little add-ons. As time goes on, I'm not going to keep talking about this. I'll give it a couple more weeks and then I'll report back on the Surface Pro 3. Right now, with all the research that I've done, I was in the market for a good hybrid laptop that can be a tablet, that can also be a full functioning laptop, and this met the needs. The price wasn't that bad. The power, performance, everything seemed to meet all of my needs. And right now I've only been using it for 24 hours, but then I did have several hours working with my client's one. And so far, so good. I'm really happy. Now, to move on real quick before we get to the voicemail, I was asked in the chat, what's happening with the iPhone 6? What did I do? Since Apple so conveniently released 8.02, that stabilized my phone. I have been very, very happy with 8.02. As I look back on everything, I reviewed it only 24 hours after it was in my hands. And during those 24 hours, I was abusing the phone. There was a monumental updates that was happening with all my apps. And it was a mess. And you probably have to give it a few days. And I know as time went on, I don't know if it's me wearing down and getting used to some of the changes. That's possible. But also, I know 802 multi-processing on the phone worked a lot better. And this was one of my biggest complaints. Also, phone calls coming in and out and not responding properly, they went away. And all of the problems, it just went away with 8.02. I'm telling you, I really, that update made a big difference. It made such a difference to me that I decided to keep the phone and not return it within the 14-day period. So I've hung in there, and now I'm sort of all in. One complaint tonight, but it's because of the case I have. I bought a very inexpensive case from Monoprice for the iPhone 6, and I love it. It's that plastic and rubber. Tonight, I have a voicemail from Winston Wolf, who left me the voicemail on my iPhone last week in response to a listener email about GFI. And when I went to record it, I couldn't fit the plug for the cable from my mixer into the iPhone. I had to completely rip off the case, and it was not easy getting the case off this phone. So I was talking about that before the show started. I really got to Dremel out the hole on the case so I can fit the adapter, or I got to make some modifications to the case, because I don't think there's going to be a case that's going to meet my needs 100%. That's a case issue. Now, as opposed to bending, hey, folks, if you stick a phone in your back pocket with very tight clothing and you sit on it, expect bad things to happen. Is it me, or is it just, you know, so the bending does not bother me. I'm not sticking the phone in my back pocket. I'm not going to have a problem. Is my hair getting caught? That was another thing. Hairgate, you know, with the phone. No, well, that's because I have a case on it. Those things don't bother me. I will say this. Since 802 has been out, I have upgraded my iPad Air and my iPad Mini, and they are working great with no issues. I still have my iPhone 5 untouched with iOS 7 sitting there as a backup. So I'm not going to get rid of that. I'm keeping that just as a backup phone that if I ever have an issue, I can quickly light that up and have a phone and not be down. So that's my plan. Let's get to the voicemails. This first one from Winston, following up to the email, and I've gotten several emails recommending the service for GFI.
Hey, Mike, Winston here, following up on podcast 519. So you have a recommendation for GFI, and you know, you should try it, absolutely. But here's the thing. They're talking about scheduling temp file cleanups and patching and so on and so forth. What we found in our use of GFI, because we used it back before it was ever GFI, it was called Hound Dog. And GFI bought it and turned it into GFI Max, was that after GFI bought it, the scripting said it was working. It never worked. So when we actually did an audit of our clients that we had managed with GFI, you know, these temp files that were supposed to be deleted, not deleted at all. These patches that were supposed to be installed, not installed at all. These defrags that were supposed to be taking place, never took place. And when we look at the logs, GFI said, yep, they happened. But when you actually look at what's happening on the back end, nope, they never did. And that was the trigger for us to find something else. That something else ended up being LavTech. There are a number of others out there. I'm just saying, evaluate it and do a full eval. Don't trust what the log says. Trust what your physical audit of the system that you're supposed to be testing with says. Put files in the temp folder and see if they get cleaned up. Make sure that there are patches missing and attempt to install the patches. And if they actually install, great, but if they don't, now you have a trace of what has happened and what has not happened. Same thing goes for everything else. Thanks for the show, Mike.
Winston, thank you. And you're right. I have to put it through its paces. And he brings up a very valid point when you're testing something. Just because the log or the software or whatever it is reports back that it did something, you can't assume that it absolutely did it, especially when you're testing something. You got to go verify, and you got to make sure, and you got to test this on your own home network, and that's what I have to do. I got to put GFI through its paces with workstations in my house. Now, I want to, before I play the next voicemails, I forgot to mention something that I absolutely have to mention. There is a blog that I stumbled onto for the Surface that I have to put in the show notes. And if you are into the Surface, have a Surface, or know someone that does have a Surface, the blog is lovemysurface.net. And you can sign up and subscribe to their community information. And I haven't gotten killed with lots of emails at all. So I signed up. You get a free e-guide that was put together by the authors of the site. And I just got to give a shout out to Tim and his wife, Joanna, who've put a wonderful site together and a wonderful blog. And it's lovemysurface.net. And I'm so glad I stumbled onto that. And especially a new Surface person, that's like my go-to site right now to learn everything relating to the Surface. So I wanted to make sure to mention that. Let's go on to voicemail from Teresa. Responding to the gentleman who had a voicemail who's from Massachusetts, who's doing IT support, we were talking about what he should do with the encryption. And I forgot about something because of the state that he's in. And this is why I love doing the show. And I love my listeners who really listen and you fill the gaps. You fill in the pieces that I'm missing. Him being in Massachusetts, it went right over my head and I missed this. Give a listen.
Hi, Mike. This is Teresa Hummel from Massachusetts. I just heard show 519, I think it was, with the call from Toby and his question about securing data on his system. When it comes to Massachusetts law, it doesn't matter what industry you're in, you must secure this data. It doesn't matter, FINRA, it doesn't matter. You have to secure it. There is a law called the Massachusetts Data Breach Law, and it went into effect on March 1st, 2010. So he's pretty much 4 years out of date. The law applies to all Massachusetts businesses and any businesses carrying data on residents of Massachusetts. So it's wide-reaching. It goes across the country. The gist of the law is all persons that own, license, store, or maintain personal information about a resident of the Commonwealth must comply with strict requirements for safeguarding and disposing of such personal information and for reporting data security breaches. I'll send a link to the relevant PDF on things that he needs to know to set something up for his company. And yes, he does need to get his system secured as soon as possible. The real problem here is trying to get this kind of information out to regular IT staff, because medium and small businesses never hear about this kind of thing. They don't have a dedicated security staff that keeps track of it. So I would like to recommend to anybody who's working in IT for a small or medium business, there are groups like the ISSA, Information Systems Security Association. As a disclaimer, I've been a member since 1999, so many years. It's an excellent group. I love them. They're really great. You get together, you find out about this kind of stuff. There are many people that you can talk to and network with. It's a great way to find out what's going on in the security field, what things you need to know, and a great place to network and get to know people. So look it up at ISSA.org. It's really great. And there's a wonderful chapter in the Boston area, of which I'm a member. If you're working in applications, there is OWASP, the Open Web Application Security Project. I don't do application security, but this is the best of the best out there. If applications are in your job description, you need to be in this group. And you can find local chapters and become a member. They are really great. And last of all, if you don't mind, I'd like to plug my little security podcast. I just started it about, I'm on episode 15. So it's called the Itty Bitty Security Podcast. I'll send a link along in an email with the other links. And your listeners may want to check it out and pass it on to friends and family who might need some little jogs to tell them exactly what to do to keep themselves safer online. When maybe they don't want to listen to the family member because, you know, no one wants to listen to the family member. Anyway, thanks for your show. I love it. I'll talk to you again soon. Bye.
Teresa, thank you so much for taking the time to putting that voicemail together and putting the links together. I really appreciate it. I completely forgot about that law that went into effect in 2010, if you have any clients that reside in Massachusetts or any customers, you fall under that jurisdiction. So that's the first link that I'm going to have. The second one is the link to issa.org, then the link to OWASP for application security. And then I am so glad that you have a podcast. Teresa, you now have a listener with me. I can't wait to start listening to your security podcast. And the link will be in the show notes. And that, again, is ittybittysecuritypodcast.com. So that's ittybittysecuritypodcast.com. Link will be prominently in the show notes. And I can't wait to listen to your podcast, Teresa. Thank you so much. Voicemail from Brian, who purchased his phone online to bypass waiting in the lines. But then remember we were talking about the pricing and the plans? Give a listen.
Hey, Mike, this is Brian Albright. I'm calling you back for a little bit of clarification on my original iPhone voicemail about buying it at the App Store and not the App Store, but the Apple Store on the phone, and not being charged that extra $25 a month per phone. In fact, that $25 did start showing up on the bill. So now for that iPhone 6, it's $40 a month. So I did avoid the hassle, and I did get the phone Friday morning at the same time you got yours, by ordering it at midnight the day that it opened. We actually, it was like 5 in the morning, and we got online and ordered the phone right away. And I did get it that morning. So you are right about that. I am on the family plan. However, another thing happened. I went into my account today, and they had this, change to this plan for more gigs for, $40 less a month. So that kind of washed out. And then what I turned around and did this morning is I went to the Apple Store online, and I bought a T-Mobile Unlocked. And then I'm just going to be able to switch the phone between SIM between my 5S and my 6. Because there's times when I don't want that 6 Plus in my pocket when I'm going for a bike ride or a hike. But when I'm on a road trip or on business, normal daily business, I do want that bigger phone. So now I'll have both phones. They're both paid for in cash, and I don't end up paying that extra fee. In 6 months when I want a new phone, I'll sell one of them on eBay and trade up. So anyways, you don't have to play this whole voicemail, but maybe just clarify that on your next show that you were right about that. Have a great week, and I just love listening to your show. I've been listening to it since before you went out on your own. Thanks. Bye-bye.
Brian, thanks for the follow-up. And I'm using the same thing you're doing with the backup phone. I want my iPhone 5 untouched. I want that as a backup, but I fear my next AT&T bill that's going to have everything on it for the new phones. I have an email here that a link that AT&T doubles their data plans starting with their 15 gig tier. I have 15 gig. I got to check. Did it get doubled to 30? Boy, I certainly hope so. I'm not sure. I'm going to check that out right now. When I get a chance, I want to thank Ron. This is a follow-up on GFI from Matt. Just listened to show 519, where you mentioned caving in on checking out GFI to offer services. As I'm getting my own consulting business started, I've partnered with GFI and wanted to throw my hat in the pile. It's been an excellent tool, both for my revenue and for the quality of service I can offer my clients. My rep has been extremely responsive in answering questions and making time to walk me through features via TeamViewer meetings, all during my trial time with no commitment from me. And he has generously gave me the contact information for his rep. Matt, thank you so much. And it's nice that I'll have a contact, and I will mention that you gave me his name. when I go through testing, and it's going to be nice having someone from the company work with me while I'm going through that trial period. So thank you for following up, Matt. Now, Don follows up with, this is on, why do I need a 128 gig iPhone? And he lists all the different sizes where he's at 30 gig usable space, and he's only currently using 13 gig on his phone. It varies. I understand you can take your pictures and have them go to OneDrive, just like me. I have a terabyte now of OneDrive. It's easy to get all your pictures off. Here's the thing. When you're buying these phones and memory is becoming so cheap, the 16 gig clearly is not enough. I have too many apps. My apps consume almost over 16 gig. So there's no way I can have a 16 gig phone anymore. So I would have naturally gone to the 32. Well, here's the thing. They don't have a 32. They have 64 and it's only $100. So I'm at 64 gigs and I know I'm going to be paying $100. Well, just for $100 more, I can double the memory. There's a couple things that when you look at the price and you look at what you're getting for the price for best bang for the buck, for $100, I had to do it. This way, I've totally alleviated any need for upgrading. And I think that's because we don't have an SD slot. Apple should absolutely cave in, but you know Apple, they refuse to. They should cave in and have an SD slot on their phones so we have a place that we can copy stuff off to and increase the memory. But no, they don't like doing that. So I think because of that, I went 128, and my logic was for $100, why not double the space? So it was just as simple as that. Will I ever use it? Probably not. Don, thank you so much for writing in. This is a follow-up. This is from Steve. I've still got a few email relating to the QuickBooks downloads and the link that I have. One of the things that you can download everything and store it right from QuickBooks. I know, I like that, but it's going to take a long time. And now that I got the full CDs, it's nice to have a place, if you don't have access to those CDs, where I'm copying all them off and I'm putting them on a USB stick and I'm giving it to my bookkeeper and I, so we can each have every version of QuickBooks Pro. So no matter what scenario I run into with a client, I got the software. But all of you have pointed out, and I'm so glad that there is a place on QuickBooks where you can get access to all of those old versions. And it's nice, and it'll do a full download. After the little setup installs, you can get the whole thing and download it. And you can get it and save it. Put that link back into the show notes again. And I want to thank all of you for writing in and mentioning that. One of the things Steve mentions here is you missed a couple of features of the downloads. If you download the setup file and run it, it'll download the complete installer.exe. You can check the box that says don't install automatically and save the exe. That's the tip. You can then copy it to your USB drive or whatever. Of course, you can download a bunch on high-speed broadband. The second advantage is the fact that they slipstream the latest update patches into the exe. If you install from a CD or image from a few years ago, you'll still have to download the update before the client can use the software. Updates are perhaps 300 to 500 meg each. Wow. And that's the great tip. So he's right. Even though I have them now, you know, most people have went through the updates. So I like that. I just want to thank everybody for following up with me on all these issues. I got to everything that I wanted to cover tonight. Please remember, the best way to support this podcast is to use my Amazon link, and that's amazon.micnation.net. Your price stays the same, but a commission comes back, a very small commission, but it adds up, comes back to help support the show. It makes an incredible difference here in me being able to not only have the hosting, but to be able to buy the equipment and continue to try to improve the audio and video of the podcast. And I do put it back into the show as you know it. So thank you so much for all of your support. And again, that's amazon.micnation.net. Share that, friends, family, anybody that you know that buys from Amazon. Thank you so much. I want to thank Instant House Call for sponsoring the podcast. And that's at instanthousecall.com. Use the promo code MikeTechShow for your free 15-day trial. Also, Fab's Auto Backup. I have not talked about that. I'm going to link his new version 5. And I'm also going to link, again, an Tech Nibbles, their computer business kit version 3. If you are in the repair business, the consulting business, anything relating to computers, you need this business kit. It's, I believe, required because there are going to be forms. There's going to be something in there that is going to help you with your business that you didn't think of. And that's why you need it. Check it out. It's great. The link, the banner will be at the bottom of the show notes. And click on that and get it. It's inexpensive from Tech Nibble. You know he's great with his business kits over the years. And this is now the latest, greatest version 3. That's it. I'll be back next week. Same time, same channel. Thank you, everyone. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to The Mike Tech Show, a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. Please visit techpodcast.com.